Tamsin is a fictional character, but what they went through is happening across London today. This is their story. In education across London, mathematics graduates ready to teach are blocked from training programmes, while secondary schools advertise desperately for the same subject teachers. The willing graduates exist, the empty classrooms exist, but the connection between them has been severed by Treasury spending rules that treat the currency-issuing government like a cash-strapped household.
I grew up in Hayes with numbers dancing in my head and chalk dust in my dreams. My mum was a teaching assistant. My dad drove the 140 bus route, and every evening around our kitchen table turned into an impromptu maths clinic when my younger brother needed help with homework. I was the one drawing diagrams on napkins, breaking down algebra into bite-sized pieces. Watching that moment when confusion melted into understanding. By the time I graduated from King's College London with a first in mathematics, I knew exactly where I belonged, in front of a Year 10 class in Hillingdon, making quadratic equations click for kids who thought they were hopeless at maths. In September 2023, I filled out my application to the Department for Education's Teacher Training Programme, Secondary Mathematics, London Placement, ready to start immediately. I had researched everything. The £27,000 bursary that would cover my living costs during training, the partnership schools in West London that needed maths teachers, the golden pathway from my degree to my own classroom. I submitted the application on a Tuesday morning, convinced I was exactly what the system needed. The rejection email arrived 3 weeks later. Not rejected for qualifications or aptitude, but something stranger. Recruitment targets have been met nationally, and Treasury has imposed spending limits across all departments. The training bursary for mathematics teachers in London has been reduced from £27,000 to £15,000. I read it twice, then called the number provided. The woman who answered sounded tired. "There's been a funding squeeze," she explained. "The Treasury allocation didn't stretch to maintain the full bursary rates. We've had to prioritise." I hung up, confused but not defeated. If the Department for Education couldn't take me, Teach First certainly would. They specialised in placing graduates in challenging schools, exactly the mission I wanted. I called their recruitment line and spoke to an advisor named James, who listened to my background with genuine enthusiasm. "You sound perfect for our programme," he said, then paused. "Unfortunately, our London cohort is oversubscribed this year. We've had to turn away qualified applicants because our Treasury grant was capped." Another funding squeeze, another closed door. The Institute of Education at UCL became my third attempt. Their PGCE programme had an excellent reputation, and surely a university could offer more flexibility than government schemes. I arranged a meeting with Dr. Sarah Chen, the admissions tutor for secondary mathematics. She welcomed me into her office overlooking Russell Square and spread my application across her desk with obvious approval. "Your academic record is exactly what we need," she said. "And frankly, we need people like you desperately." Then came the contradiction that changed everything. "The strange thing is," Dr. Chen continued, "we have 40 unfilled places on our secondary maths PGCE, 40 places funded and ready. But potential trainees can't afford to take them, because the government reduced the bursary to £15,000. That doesn't cover rent in London, let alone living expenses." She gestured toward the window. "The University of London exists. The teacher training programme exists. The funding for the places exists. What doesn't exist, apparently, is enough money to make it possible for graduates to actually take them." I walked out of that meeting with something clicking into place that wasn't quadratic equations. If the training places were sitting empty, and the schools needed teachers, and graduates like me wanted to teach, what exactly was it that there was no money for? I decided to approach the problem from the other direction. I contacted three secondary schools in Hillingdon directly: Bishop Schultz School, Northwood School, and Douay Martyrs Catholic School. All three had maths teacher vacancies prominently advertised on their websites. All three head teachers agreed to meet me. At Bishop Schultz, the head of maths, Mrs. Patterson, practically lit up when I explained my background. "We've been advertising for a qualified maths teacher since February," she said. "We'd absolutely support your training placement. The problem is accessing the funding streams. The Department for Education tells us the bursary pot has been allocated, and we can't afford to fund a trainee teacher position ourselves. There is no funding. She said it with the weary acceptance of someone who had heard it many times before. The same story at Northwood School. The same story at Douay Martyrs. Head teachers ready to mentor me. Classrooms ready to welcome me. Students who needed exactly what I wanted to offer. But the funding bridge between willing teachers and empty classrooms had been cut. I took a job as a teaching assistant at Bishop Schultz School, partly for the income, but mostly to stay close to the world I wanted to join properly. It was there I met Jarvis, a mathematics graduate from Imperial College who was stuck in exactly the same maze. We would eat lunch together in the staff room, comparing the emails we had received, the phone calls we had made, the doors that had closed with the same phrase, "There is no funding." One afternoon, walking past the empty classroom that should have been fitted out for trainee teachers, I stopped and stared through the glass door. The desks were there. The whiteboard was there. The textbooks were stacked on shelves. Down the corridor, Mrs. Patterson was struggling to cover classes because they were still one maths teacher short. In the staff room, Jarvis was marking Year 8 homework as a teaching assistant when he should have been training to lead his own classes. Everything existed except the decision to connect them. I used to accept the phrase, "there is no money," as a reasonable explanation. It sounded like a fact, solid and unchangeable as a mathematical proof. Everyone around me accepted it with the same resigned nod. The government had looked in its accounts and found them insufficient, just like any household stretching to make ends meet. But the government that issues pounds is not the same as a family budgeting with pounds. I understand that now. The UK Treasury creates the currency I earn and spend. When Mrs. Patterson was told there is no funding for my training placement, what she was really being told was that the institution with the power to create money had chosen not to create enough of it to fund the connection between willing teachers and empty classrooms. The real question was never whether the money existed. The real question was whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the classrooms were available. They were. All of them. I was standing in them, surrounded by them, blocked from them, not by mathematics or physics or the fundamental structure of reality, but by a political choice dressed as an accounting problem. This is not just my story. It is the story of every constituency where people with skills and energy are told to wait, while empty spaces and unmet needs persist side by side. The cupboard was never bare. The decision to keep it locked was political, and that decision has a name and an address and people who made it.
What Tamsin experienced has a name: cherry picking. This technique selects rare examples of government spending that didn't deliver perfect outcomes to justify never spending at all. It's like pointing to one restaurant that served bad food to argue that all restaurants should close, while ignoring the thousands that feed people well every day. In Tamsin's story, this appeared whenever officials mentioned teacher training programs that had been wasteful or bursary recipients who didn't complete their courses. These isolated cases were used to justify cutting funding across the entire system, ignoring the overwhelming evidence of what happens when government does invest in teacher training. More teachers, smaller class sizes, better outcomes for students who need them most. The underlying objection Tamsin faced was, look what happened to countries that overspent on public services. But countries that issue their own currency have never defaulted due to domestic spending. Greece, the standard example, used the euro and could not issue its own currency. Nordic countries with extensive public sectors have fewer debt crises, not more. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources: people, skills, materials, time. And in Tamsin's constituency, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Uxbridge and South Ruislip ranks 293 out of 543 English constituencies in the English Indices of Deprivation 2025 from MHCLG. The constituency has 515 registered charities, according to the Charity Commission Register. Local organisations received £18.5 million in total grants, according to 360 Giving Grant Nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.